When George Borman was a young lumberjack in the 1920s and 30s, the men used axes and crosscut saws and horses, and they cut big pines, nothing scrawny.
I never worked in a camp that they cut popple. If it was in the road, we'd cut them and drag them out of the way. Aspen was weeds, you know.
Borman witnessed the end of the giant saw log era. By the mid-30s, the great white pines were all but gone, and huge tracts of forest land were starting to come back as pulpwood, jack pine, and aspen. 60 years later, these are the trees everyone wants. No one calls them weeds anymore. Third-generation logger Robin Walsh swivels inside the beeping, blinking cockpit of the family Ponzi, a logging machine with a robotic arm.
What I'll do is I extend the boom out, grab a hold of the tree. It reaches out 33 feet. So I can sit in one place and pick quite a few trees out.
The Ponzi's arm grips a jack pine. An automated chainsaw cuts it off at the base. The pine tilts, and spiked rollers force the trunk between a set of heavy blades. Limbs drop away. The trunk is sliced into clean 8-foot logs. Describing it takes longer than doing it. The logging tradition has turned inside out from George Borman's day. The trees are smaller, the machines are bigger. The workforce is much smaller. There are fewer than 1,000 full-time loggers today, compared with 30,000 at the turn of the century. Yet timber's still northern Minnesota's economic engine, a $7 billion industry that starts right up here in a computerized cab.
I have a little nephew that's 3, almost 4 years old now, and he just loves sitting in here. It's like a video game, really. I mean, you're sitting here watching us out a window, pushing buttons.
Loggers like the Walshes cut 4 million cords of wood annually in Minnesota. That's a pile 4 feet wide, 4 feet high, and 6,000 miles long. About half that wood pile is aspen, which grows so fast and migrates so easily, it invaded much of the pine forest land that was logged off early this century. Tall and slim, with smooth greenish trunks and trembling leaves that turn gold in autumn, aspen is sought by the paper industry because its dense fibers make strong paper. It also makes good OSB, that's oriented strand board, the sheeting you see on new homes before the siding goes on. Minnesota has so much aspen that in the last 15 years, paper and OSB plants spent $3 billion building new factories or expanding old ones. The Potlatch Company has 3 Minnesota OSB plants like this one in Grand Rapids. A log riding the automated line is debarked, sawn to short lengths, and fed into what's called a waferizer, from which it emerges as a pile of thin flakes a few inches long. The flakes pass through cylindrical twirling dryers as big as school buses, then are aligned in crisscross layers and permeated with resins and wax before being pressed into sheets. Stand back, says plant manager Randy Anderson. The presses breathe heat.
We have about 2,000 pounds per square inch on the mat and about 400 degrees Fahrenheit, and the temperature is actually what activates the resins.
Though OSB factories like this one employ hundreds of Minnesotans, this is highly automated manufacturing. You can walk much of the line without seeing a soul. That and cheap aspen have made OSB so economical to produce, it now claims 50% of the market once owned by plywood. Ron Salisbury is Potlatch's vice president for Minnesota Wood Products.
If you went into a plywood mill in the early 80s, it wasn't unusual to have 300 or so workers laying up the plywood. Today, if you look at an OSB plant, a particular shift takes about 22 people to run a 12-hour shift. That's from guard to supervisor to maintenance to quality control. That's everybody that takes to make a quality product.
Remember that 6,000-mile pile of wood? OSB accounts for 2,000 of those miles all by itself. Simultaneously, the paper industry has mushroomed. Every major paper producer in Minnesota has expanded since 1980. All this growth driven by aspen. And, says Dr. Jim Boyer, who teaches wood and paper science at the University of Minnesota, by those famous spotted owls in the forest of Oregon.
One person's tragedy is very often someone else's gain, and in the case of the Pacific Northwest, where there were massive job losses and so on, we saw tremendous growth of Minnesota's forest industry, and I think, in fact, that for a 10-year period, starting in the early 1980s, we were the fastest growing forest products industry of any state in the 50 states.
But all that growth put pressure on Minnesota forests and on the industry they support. Environmentalists contended too much logging was underway. The state sponsored a generic environmental impact statement, or GEIS, designed to guide future timber policy. The GEIS has been denounced by environmentalists who say it's too industry-friendly, allowing, for example, a possible increase in logging to 4.5 million cords per year. Industry spokesman Wayne Brandt says the increase wouldn't hurt the forest a bit, but says pressure from environmental groups has already taken a lot of trees off the market.
Forest Service has decreased the amount of timber that they put up for sale. The DNR has decreased the amount that they put up for sale. There's only so much shifting between landowners that can occur.
In the past, the industry bought about half its trees from national forest, state, and county land, the other half from private landowners. Brandt says with public sources scaling back, the price of raw timber is climbing. Some manufacturers now import a percentage of their pulp from Canada.
Their stumpage is under $5, and ours is $35 and above. If the trees in Minnesota get too costly, the manufacturing plants only have two choices: find less costly fiber or shut themselves down.
The first option may be difficult. Environmental studies show in a decade or less, there could actually be a shortage of Minnesota aspen of the size used in paper and OSB. Meanwhile, mills in Canada and the southern U.S. are giving Minnesota producers more competition each year.
The clone is an NM6. It's actually a cross between black poplar from Europe and Maximesii out of Japan. Tested well in Minnesota winters, and you can see that it's grown. We must be pushing 26, 27 feet now.
To supplement what may be a shrinking wood supply, the industry is turning to science. Boise Cascade is one of several paper makers playing with aspen genetics. This NM6 clone, 26 feet tall, is just 2 years old. In a fusion of forestry and agriculture, the company has leased 700 acres to test thousands of hybrids. Research head Tom Nichols describes the ideal aspen.
The perfect tree would be almost 100% fiber. Thinner bark would be an ideal thing. Nice white color, insect resistance, disease resistance, cold hardiness is crucial to us.
Though still experimental here, Boise Cascade has an 18,000-acre fiber farm in Washington State. The trees there reach 80 feet in 6 years and are cut for pulp. Every papermaker in Minnesota is either experimenting with hybrids or considering it. The U of M's Jim Boyer says in a culture torn between consumption and preservation, growing wood fiber as an agricultural crop may be an important compromise.
In the United States, every year we use more wood than all metals, all plastics, and Portland and masonry cement combined. And yet our willingness to put up with the impacts of producing basic raw materials appears to be pretty much at an all-time low. Somehow we've got to find a way to bring those two things into sync. They have to come from someplace.
Despite wood supply worries, Boyer believes the U.S. market for paper and OSB will continue to drive Minnesota's timber industry. At least one market analyst has predicted a slowdown for the industry in 1999, followed by a recovery in 2000 or 2001. Leif Enger, Minnesota Public Radio.